Hey, Bill and Gunner, welcome to Black Lord Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and we've got Ganyara and Yurilim in the office. Hopefully, Bumi will join us. I'm not too sure if he can today, but obviously we'll check him on with his words of wisdom if he does appear. And anyway, I hope you're doing well wherever you are listening to this program, and Gai Baragala Nunu, God's peace be upon you wherever you are. And we really do mean that, because the sovereign, when you understand sovereignty, is the one that created everything, and he who creates owns. And we know that your word for the creator is the actual boss from where you are. And everyone has different names for bosses and things like that. So, but anyway, we're going to be talking about a number of things this program, but we're going to be focusing on, I guess, children's rights, and in particular from a number of levels. One, we're going to go inside and have a look at what Queensland has done through the LNP, the Chris Cifulli administration for the state of Queensland, but also what kind of other laws that exist currently internationally, like the Genocide Convention Act and other things that may provide extra protection for, let's say, Yidinji children or your mob's children. And I think that's a very important venture that we look at today, because obviously the history being, Sorry Day was recently, I think it was on Monday, and, you know, these things are real. This is when, actually, let's pay Kevin Rudd's apologies to the stolen generations and get a refresh on that.
Today we honour the Indigenous peoples of this land, the oldest continuing cultures in human history. We reflect on their past mistreatment. We reflect in particular on the mistreatment of those who were stolen generations, this blemished chapter in our national history. The time has now come for the nation to turn a new page. A new page in Australia's history by righting the wrongs of the past and so moving forward with confidence to the future. We apologise for the laws and policies of successive parliaments and governments that have inflicted profound grief, suffering and loss on these our fellow Australians. We apologise especially for the removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from their families, their communities and their country. For the pain, suffering and hurt of these stolen generations, their descendants and for their families left behind, we say sorry. To the mothers and the fathers, the brothers and the sisters, for the breaking up of families and communities, we say sorry. And for the indignity and degradation thus inflicted on a proud people, a proud culture, we say sorry. We, the Parliament of Australia, respectfully request that this apology be received in the spirit in which it is offered, as part of the healing of the nation. For the future, we take heart, resolving that this new page in the history of our great continent can now be written. We today take this first step by acknowledging the past and laying claim to a future that embraces all Australians. A future where this Parliament resolves that the injustices of the past must never happen again. A future where we harness the determination of all Australians, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, to close the gap that lies between us in life expectancy, educational achievement and economic opportunity. A future where we embrace the possibility of new solutions to enduring problems where old approaches have failed. A future based on mutual respect, mutual resolve and mutual responsibility. A future where all Australians, whatever their origins, are truly equal partners with equal opportunities and with an equal stake in shaping the next chapter in the history of this great country, Australia.
And that was Kevin Rudd there with the apology, which happened a long time ago now in February or thereabouts. I know that's not exactly why National Sorry Day exists. We know that's because of the Bringing Them Home report. But Once again, it's about forced removals and saying sorry. Listening to Kevin Rudd deliver that particular speech, it seemed really, really genuine and real, as in heartfelt. And Ganyara, on the face of it, it was. But now when you look at today's history, Indigenous children inside of Australia, that is, are being forcibly removed at record numbers.
They give you half the truth with the sorry business. You know, we're sorry about that. We're terribly sorry that, you know, we didn't mean to do that to those other mob. So, but what did they really do? That's the question. You know, what are they sorry for when he gave that apology? What was he really apologising for? And that's the genocide that took place at the time. You know, when you think about this stuff, why would you apologise for something if you didn't do it, if you didn't do anything wrong? Something really was wrong. And that was to murder the Aboriginal people. It wasn't frontier wars per se. It was pure genocide. It was just straight out murder and massacre. And so that's what they're apologising for. And they only give you half the truth, though. When they apologised, were they apologising to the Indigenous Australians or the members of the pre-colonial Indigenous nations that were here before Australia was settled? That's the question.
Well, it's difficult to know because obviously with the lack of recognition, a lot of it's two-faced forked tongue talk. And, you know, everyone, well, I don't know everyone, but a lot of people use this term like two-face when they go communities. And they say they follow their two-face. He tell you one thing, he does another behind your back. And Yurilim, I'll bring you in here. That's man, I can tell you now, the Stolen Generations is not just exclusively to this continent. It happened in Canada, the US and everywhere else, and continues to happen today on a mass level through the Department of Child Services and things like that. You hear some horror stories there. Not that I'm saying every case is like that, because there are children that require assistance and help. But unfortunately, when it comes to Indigenous children, it can come with, you know, all these fingers, and even the experts saying that that's not right.
Yeah, well, like, you know, we're talking about something so serious and so sad and so terrible. You know, one of the most terrible occurrences that could happen to a family, to have your children taken away from you. And that's just recently. You know, you go back further and the further you go back, like you said, it's not just being taken, it's being slaughtered. It's absolute genocide, and it's horrific to think that these things happened and are continuing to happen. And if you apologise for them, if I say sorry, generally that comes with an underlying statement that you aren't going to do it again. But it continues.
Yeah, and that's what I think we were looking at before. And this is a conversation we've had many times on the show. Really, it's more posturing than actually remedy. And that's the thing where even with The Voice, we saw this false hope or this a lot of people pinning their hopes on it. And when what burnt down, it was like, well, what do you expect? The leopard can't change its spots.
But did they tell you about standing in capacity? Did anyone mention that in anything at all? The Voice, the recognition, the going back to the referendum, you know, the vote, you get the 67 vote. Did they?
The apology?
The apology is a good one. Did they tell you it's about standing in capacity? What capacity are you? What's standing? What legal identity are you seen through as the parent? And what legal identity is the child seen through as the child of the parent? Because remember, what is owned by the slave, what's used by the slave is owned by the master. Remember that. So if you're using their name, the Australian identity, the Australian legal identity, then you're subject to all the Australian laws and conditions. There's no ifs and no buts. So can you call that genocide if they're taking children from an Australian family and putting them in another family? Because the definition of genocide is taking the people from basically one nation and putting them in another nation. So that'd be an act of genocide if they took, say, for example, the Kunjin kids and put them in Australia, or the Yidinji kids and put them in Australia. But it's the legal identity is the problem that no one is talking about, and no one will talk about it, because they know when they do talk about it, Australia will lose authority, because the original tribes, in their true and correct capacity, are the ones who own the place, and it's their law that is first in time, which is priority in law.
Yeah, and I guess the Genocide Convention Act, two-party, I think it is, it re-emphasises that. I would exercise caution for policymakers, people actually applying the law or enforcing it as well. Genocide is something that doesn't go out. There's no sunset clause on it, like it's going to go away after 5 years or whatever. This stuff is they were still hunting down the Nazis for, even in recent times, in our lifetime even. So this is very, very important. Not that this civics education process is a must, not only for the pre-colonial tribal mob who might form their own governments, but also for the Australian public service, the Australian police officer or correctional, or whoever it may be that is involved. These are serious allegations or laws that shouldn't be mucked around with.
Well, it's the very head of Australia. It's the very head of Australia that's at jeopardy here. You know, the head of legals, the head of that run the show. Think about this. You know, you're the leader for a reason, because you're going to take responsibility for all your subordinates, all the juniors underneath you, and that's the Australian citizens. Now, the Australian citizens are very uneducated on this because they think that they own the place. Yet the very court documents that say no, the Aboriginal people own the place, Mabo, for example, or let's look at Native Title, or let's look at the Uluru Statement from the Heart, which come out and said the true owners of the place own it under the laws of their Indigenous nation, the one that coexists, by the way, coexists with that of Australia, the sovereignty that is there. So which sovereignty are you in? Are you in the Australian? Are you under the sovereignty of the Australian Crown, being seen through the legal identity of Australia, or you are being seen through the legal identity of your Indigenous nation, whose sovereignty was here first, and Australia claimed coexist with theirs. That's the difference.
Yeah, it's often I often say this to people who are followers of the way that you know you can talk about Jesus all you like. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus, then you know in my view your eternal security is up for grabs. So the same way that Australia talks about Yidinji, where's their security of tenure? Where's their security of persona? It is not in a safe space. And so this is, you can't just talk about Yidinji and not talk to Yidinji. You can't keep that game going on and just postponing it, kicking the can down the road. And furthermore, when you're saying that the leaders are putting their hands up for this stuff, this is what the article in the Guardian newspaper is saying here. The First Nations leaders accuse Queensland and LNP of intent to destroy Indigenous communities as youth crime laws pass. Criticisms ignored as David Crisafulli defies UN human rights warnings over adult crime, adult time laws. This is, I'm just going to read some of the article and we'll come and stop and reflect. When more than 100 First Nations leaders gathered for a major summit in Brisbane this week, this is I think last week now, they set out to give a voice to the young people who bear the brunt of the state's punitive policies but are largely absent from the debate about them. Jerome Wano, was among dozens of participants who shared their thoughts on how to chart a path towards a better future for Indigenous children. This is what he said. Through the voice, we saw that we reached out our hands to the same system, and once again, it said no, said Mr. Wano, 29 years old. We have to change the way that we're doing things. And held over the 2 days, the gathering issued an extraordinary statement on Wednesday accusing the Queensland government of acting with intent to destroy Indigenous communities by forcibly transferring children to the child protection and youth justice systems. Ganyara, we can talk about this all the time now, but, you know, consent creates the contract, and this is where I think it's really important where our mob or whoever it is understand the laws that govern those spaces.
That's a good place to start. Consent makes the law. Guess what? Australia, you agreed in 1946, 45-46, to create the UN, the United Nations. Guess what? You're one of the founding members. And your consent to create the UN give away sovereignty of Australia to the United Nations. So Australia is not a completely sovereign nation in the true sense of the word, because sovereignty means no other law above you. Yet we got these very things like all the covenants and treaties that Australia has signed over the years has lost some of Australia's sovereignty. It's handed up to the UN. And the UN come out and said, the rights of children. The rights of children. Now, Australia will be hauled over the coals, I can see, in the not-too-distant future for one of the states of Australia doing this, passing this law to remove the rights of children in accordance with the UN regulations, the UN doctrine, the Declaration of of Rights for Children. So how's this going to work? Australia will be hauled over the coals. The Australian government will then have to haul Chris Afforley over the coals for removing the rights of children, a UN doctrine that's protected. You know, this is so important that Australia can't, they can't let it go. It won't be left unpunished. So by sovereignty, we're talking about there's two lots of sovereignty. There's the UN world of all the member states who have given up some of their sovereignty to make the UN the sovereign entity. And then there's the Indigenous nations whose sovereignty coexist outside of that because we were never part of Australia. We've never ceded sovereignty. We've never given it away. It was never extinguished. So our sovereignty, which is first in time, sits on the outside of this UN world. And that's why we're in the creation point of the United Indigenous Nations, which is another body similar to what the UN is, but this time it's for the rights of, it's for the Indigenous people by the Indigenous people. Such an important step is being done now so we can enforce this sort of stuff to say, look, Australia, UN, get Australia into the court. Australia, get State of Queensland into the court. Queensland, get Chris Afforley into the court because what he's doing is breaking international norms and international law.
Yeah, you know, you can't exceed what is written. And if the Yidinji Nation, for example, isn't legally recognised inside of the Commonwealth of Australia through its legal foundation document, if it's not included, then it's excluded. And Yirrkala, this is the most important part now, is that the pre-colonial Indigenous tribes had this sovereignty to use for their advantage and for the future generations, which are the children we're talking about today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the true integrity lies, the opportunity to exert power to operate as in the traditional ways which encompass the moral stance. And even though within many nations throughout the world claim to be acting morally, there is corruption within many of the so-called government systems, the legal systems, and that's why we see things like this happening where Yidinji is being excluded, not included. And it's somewhat to do with fear because they fear they're going to lose something. And yet, you know, we know that we are all one and that's how Yidinji's acting. We want to come together and work together as one, regardless of any of these other scare tactics that you might be hearing. And it's an opportunity for us to come together and that's what it's about.
Kanyara, I'm just thinking about the ramifications for people. Obviously, we talked about the Genocide Convention Act, but if, you know, the tribal nations were to unite in terms of some sort of, you know, multilateral agreements, power sharing, data sharing, police powers, sharing the courts, the whole lot, it wouldn't make this place quite an interesting space to watch because then you've got the law of the land being exercised correctly for the purposes of you know, maintaining peace, order and good government.
And that's where we're going. Remember, there's two worlds out there. You know, there's the natural world, the physical world. You know, you see the humans walking around, you see the kangaroos jumping about, you see the trees. That's the natural world. That's where humans belong. But inside that human element is a racist element. And it's being applied now into the legal realm, you know, the paper world, the make-believe, the science of law, you know, that all make-believe stuff. So it's being transferred across. It should not be racism, should not be colour seen inside a legal document, inside the legal world called the Commonwealth of Australia. It doesn't exist there, but the humans bring it in.
Is it where there is a so-called discretion allowed within the letter of the law? Is that where it's being applied?
It is, you know, and this is where they're being, oh, those kids are of black colour. They're the ones that are being naughty. How about we pick them up? How about we lock them up? How about we apply adult time to them? It's got to be across the board, you know. I'm not saying all black kids are perfect. I'm not saying all white kids are perfect. But we've got to be fair dinkum about this. There are rights for all kids. And how do we end up in this situation? And that's the important part. We've got to look at the underlying history as to how these kids end up on the street or misbehaving, whatever it is. And I'll tell you right now, it's got a lot to do with the colonial settler past that created the problem we got today, you know, the let's give them the drugs, let's give them the grog, let's give them all this stuff where they can destroy their life. And that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, when you look at the colonial project, what was happening back then when in England, They were jailing young people. They were sending them to Australia for stealing a loaf of bread. And their jails were overflowing. Women couldn't vote, whatever it may be. I mean, the whole point is that the original people on this continent now is actually acting out the role of what came here in the first place. And, you know, you talked about the adult time, adult crime law. Well, this is the LNP's so-called laws, let's say, were expanded, allowing juveniles to be tried as adults and face harsher penalties for more offences. The move not only defied objections from the Indigenous community, but also a United Nations expert who this week said the laws were incompatible with basic child rights. The Queensland Premier, David Crisafulli, spoke to reporters shortly after the bill passed. "Here's my message to the UN. You don't control me and I don't answer to you," he said. Well, you know, that may be the case, but, Ganyara, this is a very dangerous ground for anyone to walk in.
Very dangerous is not the word. The UN do control him. By Australia recognising and creating at the very start in 1946 the UN itself, and then now being participating in the UN at all levels, and then signing off on covenants and treaties and everything else that they do there, then they say, "You don't control us." My word, the UN controls Australia. I wonder what this is all about with this climate, all this climate action that's going on. You know, we're being wiped out by the rising carbon CO2. Wonder where that's coming from. That there is the UN. Understand this stuff that's coming, Mr. Crisafulli. You are controlled by the UN because you're controlled by Australia.
And what, you know, whose identification is he using?
He's using an Australian identity. And sadly, these kids that are being taken away and tried in the courts are using the same Australian identity because they're identifying through the Australian citizen. That's why they can be taken into the court. But guess what? If they go back to their true identity under their original law, the pre-colonial law that was here before Cook come and is still here today and is seen through that legal identity, what did they say to one of our citizens in 2015? "If you're not one of ours, get out. There's the door."
Well, that identity is a big word, you know, because it seems to be a crux because what you identify as, what people think the word identity means, it can be at a tribal level, at a cultural level, at a social or a legal level. It sort of spans across the lot. So it becomes confusing for people when the word identity is used, because when we talk about it most of the time, we're talking about what birth certificate are you holding. It's not about your cultural identity.
The legal identity, that's right. Where was that birth registered? Inside Australia, inside the state of Queensland. Okay, there's a law that says if Queenslanders don't register their birth of their child, they'll be prosecuted. But guess what? It's the paper world, not the human. The human is a totally different thing. But we are confusing the two together. You know, this is where humans are the natural world. We are part of the original world. We're God's children.
Well, what makes you Dingy so special then? You know, what's different about us? Why are we offering this pathway for so many other nations? And I think one of the reasons, at least, is that we have a cultural connection. You know, the Australian identity doesn't.
Well, you mean the Uluru Statement, you mean that one, where it says that they've been here for roughly 60,000 years and they own the place pursuant to their law.
That one.
Oh, okay. And the sovereignty has been is unseated and unextinguished. And that gives us the right then to make law, to pass a bill, for example, to say birth, deaths and marriages. Oh, I wonder what that is.
Well, it's the elders that created us that gave us that right. And Australia hasn't got there. Like you, Numera went back to it before. You know, what did things look like in England when they sailed this way? Oh. You know, what was the state of play? You know, how were things operated? Jailing kids, sending them to other countries thousands of miles away. That was the state of play. Has it really changed? By the looks of today's actions, it hasn't.
No.
And that cultural way of being isn't what Yidinji is. Yidinji is almost the exact opposite of that, our cultural grounding, and that's what created Yidinji. What has Australia been created by?
Let me see. Criminals. I'm just struggling to put better words to it other than criminals.
Well, listen, while you think about that, let's go to a break. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. Thanks to our friends at Bumabit Remedia 98.7 FM. If you're listening inside of Australia, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. We'll be back after the break.
Up in the sky, so far away, there is a place for everyone. Moon and the stars, they always shine out on that ocean wave. And as the lazy wave rolls by, Somewhere there's joy, somewhere there's sorrow. Out on the sea, it's always the same to me. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild, long-eyed tree goes. Are you from Torres Strait? Any place, including St. Paul Bay. Any place and just around by Mabio Bay. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild, long-eyed tree goes. Are you from Torres Strait? Any place, including St. Paul Bay. Any place and just around by Mabio Bay. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too.
So I was reading from the Guardian newspaper, welcome back to the show, and this is what some people had to say. Indigenous young people make up 70% of people in youth detention in Queensland on an average day. I think they want to build a big one up here somewhere. The LNP has previously acknowledged their reforms will likely put an extra strain on youth detention centres and disproportionately affect Indigenous children. The latest political rhetoric does not instill much hope in Katie Kiss, who is also a Kanju woman, I think, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner. She's based down in Brisbane. She said this: I think populist politics has taken a priority here. There's a perception that Queenslanders see the need for punishment rather than prevention and support, and so the investment has been going into those areas rather than actually nurturing our children. Interesting point. but Ganyara, if it's about overflow, and this is certainly going to put a strain on Queensland's correctional services and youth services, so what is the actual intention behind it? Is it the distraction of Indigenous communities, or is it for the peace and safety of the Queenslander?
Well, let me ask you this question. Has Queensland got safer over the last 50 years? Because I can remember you'd leave the keys in your car in the street before. You know, you didn't have to worry about locking your car. You never locked your house. The door was always open. People, has it got safer? Yes or no? Quite obviously, all these extra rules and regulations and tougher penalties have made it worse. You've got to wonder what's going on. So, you know, it's all about the political BS, I'd like to say, and that's what it is. It's all about I'm trying to get back in, you elect me, and I'll get my snout back in the trough. Who cares what goes on? Because we're right, you know, we got the money coming in. You know, too bad about those who don't have the money. It's about continuing the colonial project on. The White Australia policy lives on. However, they're co-opting those people of Indigenous heritage to participate in the game, to persuade the Aboriginal people to join in. How does that settle the past and secure the future? Look, Australia has done a lot of wrong. Paul Keating got it right. We done the murdering. We stole their lands. We took their kids. We done everything wrong that we could do wrong. And yet, you know, we've got to say sorry to them. Of course you've got to say sorry, but sorry doesn't cut it anymore. Let's go to the next level. Let's sort out the past and let's secure the future. And the only way we can settle the past is to come to terms with what's going on, work it out what happened. We won't do this again. Then we'll secure the future by doing proper legally binding agreements where the Indigenous nation will exist forever and a day alongside or coexisting with the Commonwealth of Australia, where it will be set in its place by those Indigenous nations.
I think it's potentially, you have to take this into consideration as well, Yurilam, I'll bring you in first, that this could be aimed at stopping young people learning about sovereignty or accessing stuff that's outside of Queensland or Australia in terms of knowledge, learning, civics education, the whole lot. So if you can imagine trying to, you know, what you said right earlier, what you said earlier, Ganyara, is right. Not everyone's, you know, innocent in terms of the children. Some of these young people are doing a lot of bad things on the street. But, you know, where does it stop and start? Is it for stealing, you know, a bit of some fruit or something else? But I have to think on a bigger level that this may be used to stop young people from asserting their rights or inside the tribal nations that are setting up their systems.
Yeah, you know, that's very true, because, you know, it's not just about us today, but who's following behind us. And, of course, it's the children that are following behind us. And if that outer system isn't willing to settle the past and secure the future through the tools that we are offering, like a treaty and that sort of thing, because, you know, we've, what was it, 2017, we offered the treaty to Australia, because, you know, they can't offer a treaty to us because they don't have the sovereignty to do that. So we took the right stance and did offer that. And while it continues, and their way of reigning over their citizens in manners that are detrimental to the children, and you know, what did you just say? 70% of the children in detention are from pre-colonial families, ones that existed before any of this turned up. That's just unbelievable. What sort of future are we going to have with our children following behind us if they're not there, if they've been treated this way? And, you know, of course, a lot of the solutions that I've seen, because, you know, I've been involved in my Australian capacity as a foster carer, as these sorts of things, I've seen what the system looks like from the inside, and I've seen the drugs that these kids are being given, so-called legal medication. And it is not. It's kiddies cocaine was one of the nicknames for it. And these children are off this rocket. You know, it's like they're on a permanent show ride. They're struggling to hold on to reality. So what chance have we got of educating those children if that's the state of mind that they're in?
Yeah, I think, pardon me, the that real, I mean, it's been like that since they got here, basically, you know, and it's not, obviously not every Queenslander is like that or every Australian is like that, but it is a system. It, you know, when people go into politics, they want to change some young upcoming person, or are they going to be good? The system changes them, and they jade, they get pulled into line. And unfortunately, this is the same thing here. We've got these Indigenous leaders inside of Australia saying the same thing over and over again for the last, man, decades. And I just, you know, I'm stuck to say we told you so. We've been telling you for the last, since day dot, since Ndingi came back and revitalised its law, since the government's been here, the Ndingi government, that is, we've been saying this thing now for more than 10 years. And people still don't want to listen or learn from this way. I'm talking about the big leaders inside of Australia, the Indigenous leaders. They know about it, they read about it, they know it's right, but for whatever reason, they're getting towed into line and pulled into line to keep the narrative going, unfortunately. And it's not, you know, it's not against them. I'm just saying that that's a reality. That's a fact in life.
It really is looking. And you mentioned Katie Kiss. Look, I feel sorry for her. She's in a position now where she's earning some serious money. She's making a mark in the world inside Australia. But I can remember back to 2013, she said to me, "You're not going to speak, are you?" At a meeting in the good city of Cairns in Gimoy. She said, "You're not going to speak, are you?" I said, "Well, I'd like to, but no, you're not." So they understand where we're coming from a while now. She should have refused the position. Look, I can't, in all honesty and integrity, take on this job because I know this is not going to eventuate to anything for the Indigenous people. They make a few little wins here and there, but the big win is to settle the past. The big win is to secure the future. And the only way that can be done is negotiated with the original tribes whose sovereignty is unceded, whose sovereignty is not extinguished. Those mob have to come back in the correct capacity and not as Queenslanders, as not as, you know, as Australians. They've got to come back in their true capacity that was here before the British come, before the Europeans come. Go back to their original nation. And you're right, she's Kunju, and they can go and do this too as well. They can go up there and make a mark. And she can exist in Australia and inside Kunju. And I can't blame her if she wants to go back and do it. But to stay there when you can see the solution, you can see the problem, see the solution, it's hard for me to say, look, I feel sorry for her, because I struggle with all the native troopers, you know, that are out there on purpose. Australia is paying them to do this.
are happy and continue to support us. And it's that recognition that actually stands as a bright light above how Australia views us.
Yeah, I think, Gunyara, it's not going to go away. And unfortunately, it might be a painful experience that Queensland is actually initiating right now, where they're going to have a whole future generation of people that are just sick of it and do take up the sovereignty option. And it might truly be an act of you know, self-implosion. We just don't know.
Well, you can't predict the future because you got to remember that all media is controlled, is owned. The editors are told to toe the line, you know what I mean? And you'll find that in Australia. Have you noticed how the voice stuff, the recognition of Aboriginal people died immediately after the no vote? That was it. You never spoke Aboriginal stuff after that. There was no one. It was dead silent. Until just recently, before the last election, when Penny Wong came out and said, oh, you know, possibly there's going to be another manifestation of the voice. There's going to be something else of the voice come out very soon. It's got to be happening. And I thought that thought, you know, I thought that I'd heard that, yes, there is a voice 2.0 being thought about and looked at and talked about. And I just forwarded it off to an academic. Said, what do you think? And he said, well, we don't really know. It's going to be, you know, the people have spoken and this sort of stuff. And that, no, it probably won't happen. And it may be only a very small version of the old voice to where it just covers issues on the gap, which are basically, the gap is no treaty, no formal agreement between them and us, for example. So there is talk again, but at what level? You know, this is it's got to be a grassroots thing by the Queenslanders who have had enough. You know, the Queenslanders of Aboriginal heritage should be starting to understand this stuff or want to know more about it, how we can work this together. And as Australians, form a voting bloc that can affect the hierarchy at the top, you know, the leaders, that David Crisafulli's of the world. How can they be affected by being voted out? They're setting a pace which is pandering to the far-right, Trump-type, you know, make Australia great again, those sort of people. But make Australia great again is over. That's finished. That finished long ago. That idea of Australia being the big supreme white nation is finished. You can see that coming all the way down with the signing of UNDRIP, the supporting of UNDRIP, 2009. 2007, Australia refused to support the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. 2 years passed. Oh, we changed our mind. We'll now support it. What happened? What forced Australia to now support it over 2 years? Was there pressure being applied internationally? Welcome to this, David Crisafulli. You'll find that UN pressure will be applied to Australia over your child laws, you know, your crime act. Just think about what's going to happen. And mark my words, I can see this in the not-too-distant future where this law will be repealed or overturned.
I just wanted to reflect on something I said about me leaving that world to come into the energy world, for example. And what I mean by that is that I'm not judging anyone else on what they do with their life. So it's not saying I'm high and mighty by doing that. It's just, that's just me. And so if I came across that I'm all high and mighty and no one else is, then I do. That's not the intention there. The whole point is that you know, we've had leaders prior to this talk about a lot of these things, and we're in a position now where we can do that. And you know, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's done their bit, who, you know, wrote letters, went to the marches, protests, whatever it may be. Those things have really helped define what Yidinji has become today, you know. So thank you for all those people that are involved in wanting to make the world a better place. But Yirilam, I think coming back to what Gunyara was saying is that there really needs to be this remedy, which Yidinji is holding out the olive branch. And it's like sometimes you're talking to a child that just keeps repeating the same thing over again. Like, you know, don't go close to that because you'll knock things over. And it's sort of like we're talking to young people or to children themselves when it comes to these apparent leaders of states and nations.
Well, you know, it's not about age of somebody. We're talking about the maturity. And so you've got a nation with a cultural age and maturity of, we'll pick a number, Gunyarama, 60,000, is that far enough for
you? Or take 1 or 2 days.
You know, whatever science wants to tell us at the moment. So
1 million.
You've got the cultural age and maturity of a nation, of nations who are, you know, tens of thousands of year old. And so it is a bit like speaking to a child in a maturity level, trying to help them understand how to live together as human beings, because that's what you can trace the origins of humanity back to, where the nations of this country began, you know, from day dot, the spiritual connection that we all have. And if you can't start from there, well, it's going to be a very difficult conversation.
It is. Gunyarra, the simplicity is the tribes aren't going away. You can try and kill them off. You can try and, breed them out. These are the old ways of thinking. And people in WA, miners and even Joe Bjelke-Petersen had his own views about AIDS and things like that were just terrible. I mean, this is not your friend. This system is not your friend. It's there if you want to use it for the business of life, and yes, fair enough, for contracts and things, but ultimately, one has to govern them, their own self and their own house.
You sure do. You got to know yourself that you're given a God-given right. The God-given right is the ability to contract, enter into a contract with whoever you like. You know, understand the ramifications. When you do enter into the contract, there are terms and conditions. When you enter into the contract of being an Australian citizen through the Queensland birth certificate, guess what? You've half sold your soul to the devil.
The devil is in the detail, as they say.
It sure is. It sure is. It's sad to say that, but you have sold your soul to the devil. Queensland can only see paper. That's all it can do. Where is the state of Queensland? You know, you can take one step down south or out west and you can leave the state of Queensland in one step. You've stepped into the Northern Territory, or you've stepped into New South Wales, or you've stepped into South Australia. By one step, there's no mark on the ground. So the state of Queensland is a paper thing. It's not a real entity. It's not out there being in part of nature like the kangaroos are. Kangaroos, nature, welcome to us. We're humans. We're kangaroos. We're all the same thing. But we enter into this world of papers through contract. That's your God-given right. But other people, the Indigenous people, have a right to go back to their original one, the one that was here first, the one that's still here. Guess what? That's the Yidinji way. And that's what we've done. So, you know, when you talk about Chris Afforley, he should come and talk to us. Come and get an understanding of the science of law, unless he's frightened of it. He may be very frightened of what we know, because once he knows it, he can't unknow it, that we have the right to be here first, the right to apply our law, the right to control all persons and things within our territory, which is also including the state of Queensland and the Commonwealth of Australia. Now, he will not be allowed to come here to this office. I'll bet money on it. He hasn't got the fortitude for a start to do it, but he won't be allowed to by the Commonwealth of Australia. Why is that? Because it's the Australian control over the states that he's fearful of. They'll pull him into line if the UN pull Australia into line over this crime act. They'll pull him into line and he'll drop his lip. Didn't they take away the path to treaty inside Queensland? We don't want any state-based treaties. Think about what Chris Afforley's doing. He's been told this for a reason. Australia is the one that we do treaties with. No one else. We can't do it with the state of Queensland because they aren't sovereign enough. They're created pursuant to the Australian Constitution. And the Constitution of Australia is now subject to some of the laws of the UN. That Commonwealth of Australia, the UN, says to Australia, you can't do this. You've got to give them children rights. You've got to protect those rights of those children. David, Chris Afforley, understand this. You will be hit by the UN through the Commonwealth of Australia. It's got to flow downhill, and you're going to be the lowest common denominator that's responsible for this bill or this law. Understand what's coming.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumbapipa Media 98.7 FM. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
Hello, you mob. This is Deb Melman, and I'm just telling you to just open your binons because you're listening to DBM.
Welcome back. The show has gone very, very quickly. We've been talking a lot about the child laws that the recent state of Queensland government has passed, and what kind of commentary and feedback that has generated inside the state of Queensland through the Indigenous leadership. But we also had a look at what kind of provisions exist on an international level and how that Queensland is, while it is maintained sovereignty inside of Australia, had certain domestic sovereignty, it cannot supersede international laws and conventions that the Commonwealth of Australia has signed up to with its intention. And Ganyara, I think it's really important to explain that again, how anything that happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but it ends up on Facebook, it goes everywhere.
It sure does. We've got to look at how Australia was created in the first place. That's through the Australian Constitution. That was an English Act, by the way, an Act of the UK Parliament. And Australia was okay to go and break away and for the states or for the colonies to federate into states. Now, the colonies still exist, by the way. To this very day, the colonies of Queensland, for example, had to go back to England, had to go back to the UK. Colony New South Wales, it's gone back there. But now we have states here that are created subject that are subject to the Australian Constitution. So when did Australia come into existence? The state come into existence. Not the colony, the state. The state of Queensland, for example, was born the day the Commonwealth of Australia was born. So they are subject to each other. And you've got to remember, authority flows downhill. Now, we'll fast forward roughly 45 years to the creation of the UN. The UN was created and Australia was one of the founding members. We want to create this thing called the United Nations. Just like when the colonies wanted to create this thing called the Commonwealth of Australia, everyone agreed, yep, we'll take part in that. Who created the UN? Australia was one of them, the United States, all of them. They created this thing that they participate in now, so they handed up some of their sovereignty to the UN. Now, the UN is saying here to the state of Queensland, your laws, you know, these crime laws you got for these children, they don't meet the standard of the international world. You better start looking at them. So that's why I'm saying the authority will flow downhill from the ultimate source of sovereignty, which is the United Nations. Australia is not a full sovereign entity per se because it sold some of its soul to the United Nations when it created that and participated. So the authority will flow downhill. It'll flow down to the Commonwealth of Australia, which will flow to the state of Queensland, which will flow through to Crucifoli. You're in trouble. Just be careful of what you're doing from here on in, because complaints in the international world by other actors of the international world will have ramifications on the state of Queensland. This is what I'm saying. It's you can't be a sovereign citizen type entity that doesn't believe in the rule of law. You didn't believe in the rule of law. Australia believes in the rule of law. It's on the Department of Attorney General's website. We believe in the rule of law. We promote it across the international world, the rule of law. Okay, let's see it apply.
Yirrlum, some final comments from you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're unfortunately in a position where you're experiencing your children being in a situation that's been discussed today, it sort of comes back once again to what we discussed or talked about earlier about identity, you know, understanding that there is possibly, you know, each person may have multiple or more than one identity. You know, I'm fortunate that I can choose whether I have my Australian or my Yidinji identity. But that's in a government sense, you know. There's also my birth identity or cultural identity, which would be connected in some ways to Australian culture, and I don't know what that actually means, but that is definitely one aspect of my upbringing. And, you know, in an economic or legal sense, you can set up companies which are their own identity. It's separate to you again. So, you know, the whole point is that you can choose to have your original identity, the one that is sovereign to Australia, that sits above Australia. And by creating your own identity of your sovereign nation, that's where the power begins.
And that's it for today's program. Gaya Baragalanuda, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are. And remember, Jesus said, suffer not the little ones. He loves the children. And you'd be better off not being born if you're going to interfere with the young ones. And, you know, you'll have a millstone around your neck thrown into the deep water. So be careful if you're playing in that world. We'll catch you next week. Kaling, Karu.
Once upon a time, there was a war in Annam land, killing our people, destroying our land, destroying our culture,
good and gone. A cut.